I feel like I feel. I look like I feel.
Wait, are we live?
We're live.
Are we live?
Really?
Hey.
Hey. Hi. It's funny. We went from like super casual, like, man, I'm so tired. It's Monday. Weekend was hard. To like, oh, like, we're live.
Hey.
Hey, Z-Pack. What's up? It's the Tom and Z show where we just talk. It's Monday. It's Monday morning quarterbacking. We talk about stuff that happened last week, things that are on our mind. Take your comments, which means I got to get the phone out because we're not just not, we're not on our game today, Tom Heinrich.
No, I know. It's true.
But yet that's going to make it the best show ever because that's how we do it.
Hey, we haven't talked about this since you've been out of town. Did you follow the Jeff Bezos dick pic story?
Oh, it was so amazing.
Did you read the Medium post?
I did. I read his Medium post. So for people who don't know, what happened was Bezos was being blackmailed by the National Enquirer, which has...
By a man named David Pecker.
Yeah.
Who owns the National Enquirer.
That's right.
The New York Times had the greatest pun headline ever, which said, Bezos exposes Pecker.
Yes. He's like, no thank you, Mr. Pecker, or something was the name of the article.
So good.
Oh, it was great. It was like, okay, so here's what happened. I had a bunch of dick pics. A bunch of booby pics, mm-hmm. and send them back and forth to my mistress. None of your business. But since it's your business, because the Enquirer took a bunch of pictures and then they threatened me. They said, if you say that we're doing stuff politically to support Trump, we're going to go ahead and release these.
Right.
And you're going to have to make a statement saying that we're not politically motivated. And he was like, how about this statement? I'm going to write a Medium piece saying what pieces of fucking shit you are.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. It's going to set the bar for people. So I'm waiting for my dick pics to come out that don't exist because I didn't have text back in the day. And now I'm like, who am I going to send dick pics to? Like, my wife doesn't want to see that.
I just love how, like, a normal dude would have been like, you know, well, all right, it looks like my dick pics are out there in the wild. Better lay low for a while. But Jeff Bezos, world's richest man, was like, this is a goddamn conspiracy that goes all the way to the president and somehow involves Saudi Arabia. Let me tell you about it.
Also, they involve, you know, my twig and branches. What can I say? It was
a genius move. Jeff Bezos is one of the smartest people in the room.
That was like, brilliant.
It was brilliant, yeah.
And you know, what it did is it made Medium cool for a second.
Right.
Like, you know, because we've been on Medium, and you know, this is funny. The naturopathy piece that me and Margaret wrote about using Britt Hermes' interview is now the number two Google hit when you Google naturopathy.
Nice.
It's been viewed something like 120,000 times, and this is an article.
Yeah.
So Medium has its positives, and Bezos kind of showed it. I just don't feel it's very on brand for us to write Medium articles. I still feel like we're a video show.
Yeah, you're kind of low diligence too. So
how dare you? And also, yes, you're right. We took that personality test. I'm like, yeah, my diligence is low. My OCD is high. But diligence is quite low. Let's see. Isaiah Fonten. I never like nor followed you. Can you explain why I keep getting your notifications? Isaiah Fonten. I picked the right comment to read. But we neither like nor follow you.
You know what, Isaiah? I didn't even know about you until just now.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and now we know, and knowing is half the battle, and half the battle sucks. Actually, it's interesting. It gets to haters. So I have no idea, by the way, Isaiah. I'm sorry. You can probably unfollow. I mean, it's a Facebook thing. It's not like I'm sitting there beaming this thing to you.
Better yet, just throw your whole fucking phone out the window. How about that?
You know what? That's even better. Even better. And throw other things out the window while you're at it. So here's the thing. We did this show called Anti-Vax, Pro-Vax, A Real Doctor Watches with Tom. And I will say this. I'm going to go on record with this. That was one of my favorite episodes that we've done because it's truly who we are. Tom is an asshole who's also smart. I'm an asshole who's not so smart, but I care about children's health and people's health. And we did a show that really highlighted that by making fun of anti-vaxxers mm-hmm. while also appreciating the kind of the angle that they're coming from. And I thought it was well done. Now, a lot of people disagreed with us.
Well, I think the biggest criticism online about it, and you know, really, it's a measured thing because it's only a 25% of the respondents thought that we went over the line, and they were like, "It's so." I'm not going to do the voice.
You don't do the voice because it triggers
mad.
Them.
Yeah, yeah,
it's very misogynist,
right?
To use vocal fry.
They just thought that we were being too condescending, that we were being jerks, basically, mm-hmm. and that we weren't
yes.
helping anybody in the conversation. Now, I think it misses the wider context of, like, okay, we can be honest, I think, with people that we're exasperated with anti-vaxxers, and we don't know how to fight this, basically, what is a mental disease that is this thought virus that's growing amongst the population. Maybe we did a bad job by being too big of assholes. You know, it wasn't tongue-in-cheek. It was just, like, straight up fuck this person. Yeah. They're a piece of shit. Look at them. Look the way they talk. They suck. Fuck them. They're inferior, right? That maybe that was the wrong approach. But that said,
makes me laugh.
We've gone through every approach. We've been hyper compassionate. We've been hyper science based. We've tried to cut through the bullshit. We've tried to engage. We've tried to deplatform them. Like, we're just exasperated. We're out of ideas. Is really the truth.
You
of
know,
the
and honestly,
and so we just decided to sit in the back of the room and throw spitballs.
That video is who Tom and I are. We're both sitting in the back of the class, and when we see injustice or something stupid, we make fun of it, and we do it mercilessly. But yeah. The thing is, I think we actually had a degree of mercy for the anti-vaxxers in that one more than they probably deserved. But that was a piece of what we did. Now, what's interesting is, again, our job is to rally our troops, to get people fired up, and to entertain and to educate. I think we did all those things in that video. And the people who don't like it, I actually understand what they're saying. But I'm like, if that's not the approach you like, we have plenty of other videos. We do a lot of different approaches, like you said. But when me and Tom are firing on our own cylinders at full bore, and we are who we are, which is two oppositional, defiant, creative types coming from different angles, that's what ends up happening. And you should see what we cut out. You should see what we cut out.
Yeah, it's much worse.
Oh my God. And we agonized over some of the stuff we cut out because it was so funny. But it was a click towards unprofessional, truly unprofessional.
All the people that are just as big assholes as we are going to be like, I want to see it.
Yeah.
Send
and you know what?
Send me the footage.
Maybe for supporters, even for supporters, I worry that it would leak. It's so, we just went so hard.
Yeah.
Again, because we feel passionate.
You know, don't you also feel like you have to fight with your hands tied behind your back?
Yeah.
Because the anti-vaxxers are allowed to go as hard as nails and have no science, no facts, no argument. Like, it's a you know, it's like the thing people say, it's like arguing with pigeons or like playing a chess with pigeons. They're just going to flip over the board and take shit all over it and trot around acting like they won, you know?
That's what
anti-vaxxers do. And it's like, you know, you can't really have accountability for somebody you don't have responsibility for. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to do that. They're basically saying, like, tell me the right thing, teach me, but also, fuck you, I don't want to listen, you're a piece of shit. You're probably paid by Big Pharma, you know?
You see, this thing, most doctors, most healthcare people have two hands tied behind their back and their legs bound up because we're supposed to adhere to these bounds of professionalism. And so when I spoke in Atlantic City this weekend and I was talking to a lot of doctors and they're like, you know what we love about you is that you say the stuff we're thinking and we can hit like and hit share, but we have plausible deniability.
Yeah.
So we can say, yeah, no, I mean, I enjoyed the video, but that, I would never say that to my patients, or I would never say that to about anti-vaxxers, or I would never say that to my administration. But this guy said it, and you know what? He's got some points. So in a way, we can be that voice, because I have nothing to lose, Tom Heineberg.
This is true.
I don't see patients for money. I see patients for the joy of it, mm-hmm. for teaching and as faculty. And if they want to take that away from me, that's okay, because then I will just turn what I do up to 25. So you know, this is the thing, like anti-vaxxers are always lobbying, like get his license removed, all this other stuff. And it's like, they, you know, they've change.org petitions to remove ZDog's license, which, by the way, that's not how it works. But imagine they succeeded. Let's imagine that I lose my medical license for speaking truth. What do you think I'm going to do the minute that license turns off?
I just keep speaking more truth.
Oh,
louder.
Fuck. Yeah. It will be so, there will be nobody in the country that has damaged healthcare or damaged the health of other people by proxy. Anti-vaxxers, administrators, companies, government, insurance, that will be safe from me.
But think about it like this, too. Like, you know what I mean? They haven't stripped Bob Sears' license, and he's out there causing harm. Yeah. I mean, he's basically solely responsible for the measles outbreak at Disneyland.
Yeah, yeah. He's on double secret probation.
Yeah.
And by the way, speaking of that, a bunch of pediatricians emailed me privately, because I have an email list, which you can sign up to on my website. And so I send out an email once a week or so with, like, our latest stuff, and sent out the measles thing, or the anti-vax thing that we did. And a bunch of pediatricians emailed me, and they're like, you know what? We're 100% with you. Fuck Bob Sears. He's a piece of shit. He's a danger to the community, to children, and he's a poison and a shame on our profession. But you know what? I'm the one who'll get dinged for being unprofessional for saying that, right?
There was a criticism that I was being misogynist by imitating upspeak or uptalk.
Right.
And I don't think that's misogynist, at least not in my worldview. I think people that talk like that suck.
Well,
if it's become more prevalent among young girls, I think they should stop.
Yeah,
because it's a terrible way to speak.
It's interesting. People think Tom says all this shit and the criticism doesn't reach him, or you know, he's just an asshole and he doesn't care. That's not true. Just the fact that he's weighing, well, was it misogynist? Because you're not misogynist. I know you pretty well, right? You have certain beliefs about, you know, whether there's traditional roles or whatever. That doesn't matter.
In today's society, you could classify me as misogynist, sure. Because guess what? I think men and women have different brains, different abilities, different physical attributes, and that we complement one another. You know what I mean?
That's the most misogynist thing I've heard.
Yeah, you say that, and people are like, oh, you're such a misogynist.
But, you know, I think...
Listen, here's something that's not misogynist. I have a daughter, okay? And if I ever want her to be in a leadership role, I don't want her to speak like things are a question. Because then nobody is going to follow her.
Can I tell you something right now, Tom Heineberg? I'm gonna die on my sword on this, too. Upspeak is the most fucking vile... just rape of the English language that I have ever heard. When I hear people speaking it, and guys do this too. It's not.
No, yeah. Bob Sears was doing it.
Bob Sears was doing it in the fucking video. It makes you look like you're intellectually disabled, and that is actually an insult to people who actually suffer with intellectual disability.
But who are you? Just some man? Sorry.
You mean just some man?
I keep going into it.
Yeah, no, it's easy to do because it's so infuriating.
Who are you? Just some man to police the voice of young women? Who are you?
Okay. You know what? And feminists have written about Upspeak saying it is a scourge. All right, because what it does is it's like the Valley Girl talk.
Yeah.
Except guys do it too. With the vocal fry, with the upspeak, everything's a question. It's a bastardization of how we communicate.
Yeah.
When you end in an uptone, it implies a question.
It's like, I'm Ron Burgundy? Damn it! Who typed a question mark on the prompter, you know?
Gabriel Latham says, well, then take the garbage out, Tom. That's your role.
I do take that.
He does. everyone lies. An honest person, until you're honest with them, then you're just an asshole. Courtney Neal. I mean, that's true. We were talking about radical honesty.
You know, okay, this is interesting because I used to be much more this way, that I believed in radical honesty. Now, I had to look at myself deeply because what I was really doing was weaponizing honesty and truth, because there's a lot of times you don't need to say the truth to somebody. Just like we have white lies, I think we have black truths.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Interesting.
Because there are a lot of times that I don't need to say certain things to you, even if they're true about you.
Right,
I'm just saying them to hurt you.
Right. That's interesting.
Or to make myself feel superior.
Black truths. You know? Sam Harris wrote a book called Lying, and it's about how radical honesty is very important and lies are never good, which...
Right. In that book, he also talks about how you have to find polite ways to say what you're saying.
That's right. In other words, you're not weaponizing it. You're not using it to hurt people.
Yeah. There's sort of this rubric that's like, is it true? Is it polite? Is it necessary? Mm. And if you can't check all three of those boxes, you probably shouldn't say it. And for a long time, I was just like, is it true? Yep. Fuck you. Here, your nose is crooked, man. Right.
You look like a beta cuck.
Right.
Exactly.
So maybe in the anti-vax video, we did a little bit of like, it's true.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily polite or necessary.
Right.
But it's true.
Right. You know? Well, it might have been necessary to make an entertaining video in our minds. And I think we're laughing at the video. We're enjoying ourselves. And sometimes we put out stuff that we just fucking like.
True.
And you know, our hardcore fans get it. They understand. Mm-hmm. I think there are fans that are on the fence that are like, I don't know about that. Certainly, it wasn't shared as much as our other pieces because people are scared to share it.
Well, yeah. People are like, it goes a little hard.
It goes hard. Because
Even though I believe in it, or like I'm laughing with you.
That's right.
It goes a little hard.
That's right. Whereas the piece I did saying how we should deplatform anti-vaxxers and how they're a scourge and child murderers, people shared that one because that felt correct to them.
There was a conversation. On it about or on the video on r-medicine on Reddit and I usually I really like Reddit because I think in general it's a lot of younger doctors who are having actually like very nuanced conversations on r-medicine and there was fair point about like we went too hard and we're probably alienating people. I don't know how I feel about that.
I think that the anti-vaxxers have been doing this forever. We're giving them a thing out of their own playbook.
Yeah.
And I think it's a way to rally our troops because now I think there's a tipping point where even the press is starting to shame anti-vaxxers.
Yeah. And I think we need to.
We need to.
When the whole problem with that video that we watched was it's a false equivalency.
Yeah.
There's not a debate about it. And I said this thing in the video that people took as a rape joke.
Oh, yeah.
And they were like, they were like, you know, because what I said was, I said, this open-minded argument is specious, because it's like if I said to Z, you know, you're not open-minded because you won't think about rape as a mating strategy, mm-hmm. because historically rape has been a mating strategy for males all the way up until modernity. Mm-hmm. So every one of us is a product of rape through our ancestry. Mm. That's true. And so I was using it as an analogy, yeah. but we would not tolerate a rape debate in modernity, at least not here in the West.
Cause there is no debate.
There is no debate. You can't force yourself on somebody that way.
And you're saying the same thing about anti-vax. I'm saying that was the analogy thing. You made.
There's now, it's a false equivalence.
Again, now one of the things is I think we have to, and this is just like internal processing of these things. Like, how do we deal with comments like that? We have a negativity filter because that's how our elephants work. We pull the negative out of a stream of positive. So there could be 10 comments that are like, yeah, fuck yeah, that's what I believe. And then one that says, Tom, you've just condoned rape. You're a misogynist and we
hate
you.
Right.
And we'll focus on that. And
well, I tend to think those people are stupid and I don't I don't care about what they're saying.
Right.
But it is interesting to me that people think that way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It is. I mean, I actually... If you put your mind molecule for molecule and how they think, you could see how they could come to that, and still we can believe they're wrong, and mm-hmm. and we do. Itzhak, by the way, says vocal fry is actually a technique for opening up the vocal cords, and this is actually true in speech rehab and things like that. If you have vocal damage, you're supposed to go. You're supposed to do these vocal fry things. Now, that still does not give an excuse for young people to speak like that.
Right, you're not supposed to do it at the kombucha bar.
That's right.
You know, when you're in line at Whole Foods.
Is this a small batch?
I'm a designer by trade and a mother.
I think there was also a component of misophonia where some people were just annoyed by
voice. By the sound,
didn't want to hear us do it.
Well, good. If you're annoyed by it, it makes the point.
Right.
It's a fucking annoying
voice.
It's
an annoying voice.
Yeah. Don't do it. If you do it, you can train yourself out of it.
That's true.
Yeah. Go to a vocal coach. They'll teach you.
Yeah.
They're sitting there going, you know, it'll be like My Fair Lady.
Oh.
You know, you'll have the... Have you ever seen My Fair Lady, the actual movie?
No.
Oh, you fucking... It's the greatest. My parents used to make me watch it, and then I became this like whole, you know...
I've seen clips of it. I know what it's about.
It's you know, the Pygmalion story.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm getting married in the morning. Ding dong, the bells are gonna chime. Chelsea says, can we shame the detox diets too? Because all they make you do is poo, and we have livers for detoxing, Chelsea Corbett. We talked about that with Nina Shapiro on the show. We're always shaming detoxers.
Do you know about these? Did you mean detox, or was it really detox?
No, she wrote T-tox.
T-tox, yeah. So this is the thing that happens on Instagram, that these girls are selling skinny teas, fit teas, and I don't know what's in them. We should look into it, but... There's probably like EGCG, stuff like that. Or
it's funny, Dr. Mike reached out about doing a combined show where we make fun of these T-toxers on Instagram, because he's big on Instagram. And I was like, I don't know enough about it, but it sounds interesting. By the way, he did a version of A Real Doctor Watches, the same anti-vax movie we saw.
Yeah.
We saw it after ours came out, but he had already released it. And he was very serious, very professional. And there were some people who were like, oh, we really prefer your version because it's so much funnier and that's what the truth is. And then other people were like, Dr. Mike actually taught and he was professional and so on. So you know what? Different strokes for different folks. I think you teach on all angles. We're all fighting the same war with different weapons.
Yeah, 100%. Plus, our video is for the back of the room.
It's for the back of the room.
It's for people who already know and are, you know, fucking frustrated by this.
Yeah, it's not going to convince, you know... a hardcore anti-vaxxer, it may not even convince a mom on the fence.
Now, people were saying that you shouldn't, you know, like, you're setting a bad example for basically practicing physicians who have to talk to these people on the daily basis.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And they're like, well, I could never talk to my patients that way. So, you know, I don't even want to go near this video. I don't want to be infected by this thought worm that they're all just terrible idiots, you know?
You know what? That is valid, except. We've done so many shows on understanding people's mindset, their moral matrix. Mm-hmm. We had Paul Offit on talking very compassionately about the anti-vaccine position and how we can counter it. I had Blair Duddy talking about how he talks to his patients as a practicing pediatrician. So we have done that work. We've put that effort in. I understand people think this sabotages it. I don't think so. I think it's part of a broader strategy.
Yeah.
We don't do anything without thinking, Tom. That's one thing. Like, we do... very much put thought into this before we release it. And if we really thought we were doing the wrong thing, we never would have released it in the first place.
That's true.
Yeah. But, you know, and there's been things that we haven't released because we put a lot of effort into it and we saw it and we're like, that's just mean. Like,
yeah.
It has no benefit. Like the match day thing is coming.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, we just wouldn't put it out. We put it out for supporters because we wanted to show them what assholes we can be.
Right.
And they were like, yeah, you guys are real assholes. Yeah. Or the lactation nurse one.
Yes.
That was just straight mean and weirdly like had this Nazi imagery, and it was just the whole thing was terrible, poorly conceived from the beginning. But
that's comedy, is like sometimes comedy is not going to be funny.
Correct.
Because you're trying to make it funny. And yeah. If it's not, you know, to me, if it's not funny, it's not entertaining, and then nobody's going to watch
it's
it. Like
sticky.
Like I think, you know, all the information that you outline about Bob Sears in there, I think is very important because people need to know that. You
know,
Dr. Mike didn't
is.
Seem to know who he was.
Right.
And he was just like, oh, here's a guy. He's clearly, you know,
right,
whatever.
Right, right.
But you knew exactly who he was because you follow these things and you're really up to date on medicine. It's interesting because you have such a interesting persona. You're like half a clown, half a well-respected, you know, Ivy League doctor. And so it's very, people don't know what to make of you or what box to put you in. You know, your name is fucking Z-Dog MD, which is like, I told, you know, a while back I tried to make Z change it to just Dr. Zubin Demania because I was like, this is the stupidest fucking name. And Facebook wouldn't let us change it. So we're stuck with Z-Dog forever now.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
you know.
No, every point you bring up is something that we've been thinking about for many years. And what's interesting is it is a Trojan horse. They expect, even people who hire me to speak, they expect this clown. They expect me to go and do raps and
yeah.
stuff like that. And then they get this performance where people at the end are crying and they're inspired to go do something. And they're like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you just got Z-Dog MD'd, bitch.
I think about it like
the name is dumb, but the movement isn't.
I think about it when you slip a pill in like a ball of peanut butter for your dog. You know, the dog is like, peanut butter.
Oh,
and then it gets some medicine.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like the comedy and the entertainment and the whole thing surrounding it is what the there's a message in that anti-vax video of compassion for
there
those
really
people.
Is.
Now, yeah, did we spend a lot of time mocking them? But I can mock you and still feel like I don't want you to die. You know, I don't hate these people.
You know, so this is,
I want their children to be harmed.
Exactly. I like to think of it this way. Look, the fact that we spent the beginning of the video just mercilessly ridiculing them, and at the end going, you know, it is a very isolating, very deep kind of suffering. If you have a adverse event from the vaccines, you're one in these rare people that has it, and no one's listening to you, and the doctors aren't listening. We don't have the time, and Dave Epstein said it in the video, and this is terrible. We have to do better at this. This is on us. And what that does, it sets you up for a state of credibility. Like, look, these guys hate anti-vaxxers, but they're still able to say this, which means there's truth here. The same thing happened to me when I used to follow Sam Harris in the early days when he was writing books like The End of Faith.
Right.
And I'm like, wow, finally someone understands how damaging certain organized religious beliefs can be to mankind's progress. But the reason I liked that book was not because he was an atheist, because it's a very empty protocol. It's saying no. It's not saying, well, then what are you giving me? What are you telling me about the nature of reality? Is it all just material atoms? What Harris does in one chapter in the book is he goes, well, here's an alternative way of thinking. What if we actually examine consciousness through meditation, and maybe there's a spirituality that we're missing and a truth about the universe that we're missing, and it comes from empiric looking at it?
See, I like Peterson's approach on that topic, because like all edgy 13-year-old boys, at one time I was an atheist and I was like, good, God is dumb. It's dumb. You believe in that? There's a man in the sky? You're dumb. by the way, that was not upspeak. That was my 13-year-old Tom voice.
That was 13-year-old Tom voice, right?
You know, and then, but I came around to it later in life, and now I don't tend to be so hardcore atheist on anything.
Me too.
I'd say I'm somewhere in like the Buddhist agnostic, like
that's where I am.
Who knows where I am in the spectrum. I don't know what I don't know, and none of us know.
That's right.
So I think we should all just be kind to each other. But I like what Jordan Peterson has to say on the subject, which is there's so much deep wisdom in the Bible that, you know, we can't just necessarily throw the baby out with the bathwater, especially with the Bible. There's a lot of deep wisdom in there.
Yeah, and I think, and there's archetypical wisdom, and there's stories, and there's a power of the oral tradition and the written tradition. I think what Harris would argue is that it's for the people who take that book as a literal word.
Literalism is a curse.
Is
in this
a poison.
Regard.
And then what ends up happening is you say the earth is 6,000 years old and we should murder gay people. And that's where I think they push at each other, and they debate each other publicly, and it's great. Those talks are great.
Yeah.
Because you get to hear two smart people talk about this stuff.
Yeah, people that take the Bible literally, like, come on.
And there are quite a few of our fans.
This is a really old.
Quite a few of our fans. And now, if we were pandering pieces of shit, we'd be like, it's okay if you take it literally.
Yeah.
Because maybe Jesus did come down and do these miracles.
You know, I also, in terms of just time dilation, if God wanted to make it irrefutable, why didn't he send Jesus during the time of HD video?
Oh, he could have made the message amazing.
You know what I mean? What if Jesus was out there right now on Snapchat and we were all witnessing the miracles firsthand, you know, and they could be, you know, prove that they weren't Photoshop and, you know.
The Jesus paradigm was the perfect paradigm for that age of humans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're coming out of Old Testament times where it was a storm and drang God who was an authority figure, mythic magic. Then you get to the Jesus side where there's more this compassion sort of idea and it starts to work and it sets up the premise for Western civilization. And then you have, you know, Islam and you have my people, the Zoroastrians, which coexisted at that time, monotheism and this idea that there's one. And all these things collude. I think they all converge on this idea that there's one sort of ineffable sort of whatever, for lack of a better word, spirit that imbues everything and we should explore it.
What you said is interesting because I think too often we forget that everything is evolving.
Yeah,
you know, including changing. Including religions, and we want things to be static because there's comfort in that static paradigm. But it's not true. There's not really stasis in nature. Everything is either accelerating or decelerating in nature.
It's all evolving constantly, and that's why, like, you know, and so here's an interesting example. So Kate Nicole, who's a supporter, says, "You lost me at Jordan Peterson Black." I would have said the same thing 8 months ago, because all I knew of Jordan Peterson was what the media was saying, which is he's some alt-right adjacent, conservative turd. Then you actually listen to what he's saying. And look, I tried to listen to his book. It was aimed at a lower denominator than I thought I was. So in other words, I couldn't get much out of it. But then I watched his interviews with Rogan, listened to him talk. A lot of what he's saying is about the power of archetype, the power of taking personal responsibility and holding yourself to a standard, about standing up straight in the world. And there's nothing wrong with those messages.
Well, we were having a conversation earlier about raising children. And, you know, one of his messages is that, you know, you have to start from the place that, like the Buddhists say, life is suffering. But in Peterson's worldview, life is not only suffering, it's suffering tainted by malevolence. And so your natural instinct as a parent is to keep your child safe from these kinds of things in the world. And that's the opposite of what you want to do. It's you have to, you know, use basically exposure therapy with your child in order to strengthen them, right? And that's how they stand against suffering. That's how you stem the tide of suffering.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Hey, and it's interesting because a lot of people accuse him of being a misogynist. There's some people, see, he is some alt-right conservative turd, says Zahn Mundhank, who's a valued commenter, but not a supporter. So fuck her. I'm just kidding. And it's interesting. People get very triggered by him. He's a misogynist, question mark, and woo, who went on Dr. Oz, Susan Robinson. He did go on Dr. Oz.
Yeah.
And that I will never forgive him for, but he actually went on Dr. Oz and basically schooled Dr. Oz on his own thinking on stuff. Now, how can this guy be a misogynist when he's saying there should be equality of opportunity for both men and women, but not equality of outcome?
Well, I think the you know, okay, it's like, let's talk about, did you read Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez? Did you read her?
Oh, the AOC?
Did you read her Green New Deal?
I didn't read it.
So one of the bullet points in the Green New Deal is we will provide economic support to those unable or unwilling to work. Unwilling.
That's
so
a tough word to
you
use
have to
there.
Be really cognizant of what's happening on the left, that when the left says equity, they don't mean equality. It wasn't a slip up. They actually mean equity. And that's communism. You can't have redistribution of wealth in that manner without having
the way to think about
a top-down centralized authority who's going to throw everybody in a gulag.
The way to think about this is you have equality of opportunity for everyone. Everyone gets a shot at whatever competence hierarchy they want to play in. If you want to play in politics, well, here's your shot. Whether you're black, white, Chinese, Filipino, it doesn't matter.
Right.
You get a shot. And it's up to the top of your competence. But if you don't give people equality of opportunity, the best people are going to be missed. The people who are going to contribute to the world are going to be missed. And that's true. That's why slavery was terrible. That's why not allowing women equal opportunity in the workplace is terrible, because you're giving away half of your talent pool. When you start mandating, which I think the extreme left wants, equality of outcome.
Yes.
In other words, you have a diversity czar at a college that's saying, we need to make sure we have this percentage of this group, this percentage of this group. That's equality of outcome, not of opportunity. Yep. You are by nature harming people who are qualified across the pool. Now, the thing is, we're not there yet where we have equality of opportunity. So people like AOC, I think, are arguing too that we need to level the playing field so people can compete. But then they say things like unwilling to work. And you're like, well, if you're unwilling to work, fuck you.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that this is why the left is actually super dangerous. The far left, you know, the intersectional left, as I'm going to start calling them, is they actually occupy positions of power. Nobody takes white supremacist seriously anymore. I mean, there will people there will be people who say that the president is a white supremacist, but he's not. He's just an asshole and an idiot to boot. You know what I mean? But people on the left actually want to tear down what makes this country function, and they want to rebuild it in, you know, some sort of communist dystopian image.
Well, you know, and
people on the far left.
Think about
the intersectional left.
The far extremes on either side, they have an interesting thing. So I was listening to Harris talk about Liam Neeson recently.
Right, yeah, I heard that too.
It's an interesting story. So Liam Neeson told a story voluntarily about how when he was younger, a good friend of his, who was a woman, was raped by an African-American guy. And he got so mad at this concept of injustice to her that he picked up like a bat or some like billy club. And he walked around waiting for a black person to attack him so that he could beat the crap out of them.
Yeah.
That's how clouded his thinking was and how full of rage he was about this event. And he told the story in the context of, can you believe how insane I was? And how human minds are subject to this kind of bias and this crazy thinking under emotion. And what ended up happening is the left vilified him. They were like, this is an unforgivable crime, a thought crime that you committed. You're a racist. Your movies should be boycotted. You should lose your platform, this and this and this. These are the same people who will look at an actual rapist who is in prison and say that person needs rehabilitation and reintegration in society and forgiveness. But the thought crime of voluntarily saying, this is how I was, can you believe what a person I was then and who I am now, is unforgivable.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Right.
To me, that is, you talked about things evolving. People evolve. We are not the same person. If you pull the shit that I said in high school, and again, it wasn't even what I believed. I would just say stupid shit because I had no frontal lobe.
Yeah.
And you played it now. The left would fucking crucify me.
I got into a business deal with, you know, me and Logan got our start doing Mexican music videos.
That's fucking amazing.
There's only two places that that really do music videos anymore. It's country music and Mexican music. You know, banda music is what they call it. And so me and Logan would do, you know, these music videos that would play on Telemundo and stuff, and like they were very popular. And I got into it with this guy who was running one of the Mexican production companies, and he basically he was a total con artist, piece of shit. His email used to be richboyventures@gmail.com, which is how you know what a piece like, of shit.
You would think richboyventures would have @richboyventures.com. Yeah.
Right? And we delivered him, you know, an amazing video, and then he basically refused to pay for it. And while we were negotiating about all the, you know, the contracts and everything, I started to become sort of racist against Mexicans in general, which had never even entered my thought process before, but I was getting worked over so hard by this guy that I was like, man, fuck these people and fuck the, you know, and this lasted for like, it was probably transient. It probably lasted for like a day or so. But I never felt that way before, and I don't feel that way now, but it happened to me at that time. Logan's Mexican.
I still hate Mexican.
And Logan hates Mexican. But you know, that's interesting. So what woke you up out of that? That bias that was transiently induced by an emotional state of being screwed.
I had to just get over it and just realize that, you know, how can I tar and feather an entire people based on the actions of one man?
Yeah.
I can't.
You know what's interesting is I think anyone who fucking denies that that's happened to them in their head when they've been screwed over is fucking lying to you.
Yeah.
They're self-deceiving. And in fact, they made themselves believe that it hasn't happened to them.
No, it happens. I think it happens to everybody.
I think it happens.
Yeah.
And the thing is, if we can't talk about it,
people don't want to like express it.
Because especially now.
You could say, you know, oh, look at Tom. He just said he's racist against Mexican people.
And you'd be fucking high if you actually got that out of that conversation.
Right.
But that's what the left will do, and the extreme left. And I think it's what Rogan calls recreational outrage.
Yes.
So in other words, they spend their time on Twitter being outraged. People attack me all the time on Twitter, recreational outrage. He's a misogynist. How?
I firmly believe, like I was telling you this earlier, I think that we are going to look back on this time period that we're in right now and view it as a civil war, but it's an information war. And there's no distinction between civilian and military participation in this war.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is part of this civil
constantly
war.
Fighting.
And I think what you got to ask yourself is, what role are you playing in the cultural war? Because we're all kind of playing a role if we're on social media and we're engaging in these discussions.
We were talking about this earlier, and my feeling is my role to play in this quote-unquote culture war that's going on, the outrage on the left, the insanity on the right, all fighting, everybody's moral matrix being represented in their tribe, outrage culture, call out culture, safe spaces, and then on the right, this idea that, you know, you just sit around trolling the left because the left is totally idiotic. And my idea is, let's take whatever truth we can, have the discussions that people are scared to have, precipitate out as much wisdom as we can, and show people that center left and center right can actually have reasonable conversations, remain friends, and produce progress.
Right.
Heaven forbid. Of course you would say right, you fucking racist. let's read some comments. Cancel culture, says Liliana Cook. Yeah. Right, cancel your show. Roseanne Barr, what do you think about that thing? This was tough.
You know, cancel culture is interesting because it goes both ways. There's an argument on the right that it's only against conservatives, but that's not true. I mean, there are, like, James Gunn got kicked off of Guardians of the Galaxy, or Kevin Hart can't host the Oscars.
Which is bullshit. Yeah.
Know? Yeah. And I think, you know, it's interesting, man. Middle America is definitely fed up with what's going on.
Mm.
And they don't, like, I know a lot of people who won't watch the NFL anymore. That, you know, they don't want to watch the Oscars or the Grammys or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think it's because they feel like they're not being served by the powers that be in the mainstream media, and that there is sort of a, you know, yeah.
Well, you know, the thing is, you vote with your...
And those are the Roseanne fans.
You vote with your choice, and you say, you know what, I'm going to watch what I think it compels me and it is politically aligned with what I want. That's fine. But I think this argument that we should be canceling shows based on the gaffe, you know, and there's gaffes and then there's actually stuff that people say intentionally and they don't give a fuck. For example, Trump never has a gaffe.
No.
No, he's not gaffing. No. And he'll tell you, he said this. He's like, I don't have gaffes. I say exactly what I mean. And it's true.
Yeah.
He's saying it because he knows this is how I'm going to influence people. This is what I'm going to do. Whereas, you know, on the left, I think it often is a gaffe.
Yeah.
Like if someone says something that they actually are thinking, it was a gaffe. They didn't mean to say that. They didn't mean to let that slip.
Yeah.
And to me, it's like, just say what you fucking think.
Well, with the Roseanne story, I think the specifics of that story are that she didn't know that woman, Valerie Jarrett, was
black.
Yeah. And that she kind of thought she looked like a character from Planet of the Apes. And so she said she looked like a character from Planet of the Apes.
Right.
Now, when you do find out that somebody's black and you called them an ape, that's pretty bad.
It's pretty bad.
It's pretty egregious. You know, it's further compounded by the fact that she's mentally ill and she was on Ambien.
Yeah.
It's further compounded by the fact that who gives a shit
about
that show?
Who gives a fucking shit? Yeah. That was my thing. like, I don't care what Roseanne does.
I know.
If you're dumb enough to watch network TV in this day and age, you can go fuck yourself anyways, man. Like, who cares? But, you know, there was something relating to that we were talking about Planet of the Apes. Blackface.
Blackface.
So it was funny. When I did the show over the weekend, I made a joke. I said, you know, so one of my big breakthroughs was we did a video where I dressed up as Michael Jackson and I wore a wig and a robe and I was grabbing my crotch going, I'm checking out my nuts in the mirror. And I was telling them, they were laughing, and I go, you know, God, I'm just glad I didn't do it in blackface because now I wouldn't have a career. And people really laughed at that joke because there's so much tension. There were a lot of African-Americans in the audience. There's a tension now where you can't even have these conversations and it's building up in us. It's like, let's really have honest discussions about race.
Yeah, man. It's, you know, you always think about this. Remember you caught some flack for, there was that app a while back called Masquerade.
Oh, yeah.
And you did an Obama impression. And,
right.
You know, there was like a Snoop Dogg one. And for a while, this was like in 2015, none of us really saw this as blackface. But then it took the internet collectively about 3 weeks
to figure it out
to dawn on them that this is digital blackface. Yeah, and now you don't see that represented as much anymore.
It's fascinating. So I did this whole thing with Obama rapping in the lab,
right?
And he was like, you can find me in the lab, bottle full of crap, but mama, I got the plates if you're into growing that.
Yeah,
I did the whole thing, but with Obama face, digital,
right?
And it's interesting. So I got a couple white people commenting, you know, this is basically blackface. And I laughed out loud. I'm like, you fucking kidding me? It never would have occurred to me this is blackface. Then some black people commented. And it's interesting how the dynamic in my mind changed. Suddenly I was like, wow, I've offended the only people who have the right to be offended by this. And then I started looking at it and going, it does kind of look like blackface. And then I was like, fuck this, delete. This was a huge mistake.
Yeah.
And it came from a place of, I could see how, you know, in the minstrel shows and people are dressing up in blackface, ridiculing black people, how they could see that was the case. At first, I defended myself. I went online and I'm like, you know what? You can make fun of the president. Just because he's black, that means I can't dress up as the president? That's fucked up. That's racist. Then I realized, no, this is a very different valence. So you can kind of get a sense of where, if we can't even talk, and then I did a show about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, it's so tricky with all these things. Like, you know, because the right wants to say, well, listen, if you dress up like a black person for Halloween, then you're just basically, you're a fan of that person. And this is a positive thing. And it's like, okay, but that has a supreme lack of historical context. Right. And the biggest historical context is that blackface is not only a mocking practice, you know, like the way Al Jolson would do it and jeer at black people, but it's an exclusionary practice because it was from a time when black people were literally not allowed to be in white spaces. Mm-hmm. So that is why the actors had blackface on a lot of the time.
So it carries this historical weight and momentum that I think is important. One interesting parallel to that is, you know, I reposted the video I did about the Vanderbilt nurse,
right,
which we talk about a little bit too, shift topic a little bit, but the Vanderbilt nurse who got arrested and so on and so forth. You guys can watch the video. And I reposted it with the framing from that famous poem about the Holocaust where, you know, first they came for the nurses and I was quiet because I wasn't a nurse. Then they came for the RTs. I was quiet because I wasn't an RT. Then they came for me and there was no one left to speak for me. And I thought it was a very powerful way to frame that video, which is we have to make noise because who's safe from arrest if we make mistakes? How do we create a just culture, culture of safety? Well, one person made a comment and said, and they were Jewish, and they said, how dare you compare a nurse getting arrested to the Holocaust? Do you even understand that this poem came from the Holocaust where 6 million people were slaughtered, children? And it's weird, you know, again, because it came from a Jewish person with the weight of history behind it and the way they phrased it, I actually felt it for a second. I was like, oh, I see that. I'm not going to change it because I think it's powerful, but I actually bow to the fact that you are affected by this. But yeah, it was interesting.
I don't know. I mean,
again, fuck it. I left it.
Yeah.
Right? Because I mean, no, fuck you. Because this actually, it is a very, it's a parallel in that it's about speaking up when there's cost to speaking up.
Listen, how granular are we going to be about everything? We're going to, you know, police every interaction everywhere.
My take is, listen, assume people are good.
Yeah.
Assume people are good and they're doing things with good intention. Instead of assuming they're evil, trying to fucking rape the memory of the Holocaust.
Yeah.
A fucking two-bit, you know, Z-Dog MD clown is going to, you know, destroy the memory of the Holocaust through a statement and he's meant to do it and he's evil. That's what the assumption is. You know, the way to leave that comment is this. Hey, I appreciate the gravitas of this. Understand where that gravitas came from. This was about the Holocaust.
Yeah.
So, you know, understand the weight and the historical significance of that's the way to leave a criticism about what you think my use of the comment is. Not, you're a bad person and are offensive. Do you even know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's, you know, outrage sells. Outrage is part of the algorithm on all social media platforms because outrage cuts both ways. That's the way that outrage works. When you put, they were talking about this on the Rogan show that Samsung likes to do this thing where they put nasty surprise, or Business Insider, I think, likes to do this thing where they write about the new Samsung product and they say, the new Samsung product has a nasty surprise.
Because Forbes says that for Apple.
Right. Yeah. And that makes you want to click on it because you're like, I can't believe they did this. I'm outraged, you know? Mm-hmm. And it cuts down both sides of the political aisle. So that's why the algorithms prioritize that kind of thing. Mm. And so we've all become these little outrage machines, like looking for hot takes that we can be outraged about because really we just want to be noticed and we just want to be participants in the conversation valued.
We want to have social clout. I think now having social clout is getting outrage and pointing out someone else's outrage.
Right.
And then other people hit like on your thing and that's
Look at this little bitch ass Eugene Gu on Twitter.
Fuck that guy.
Right.
Oh, wait, actually, hold on. Wait. Okay, first let me say who he is. Then I want to say why what I just said was a bad idea. So Eugene Gu, Vanderbilt surgery resident, always goes back to Vanderbilt these days. That's where all the controversy is. And he got
the Dirty South,
famous. Yeah, he got famous for taking a knee outside the OR because he felt like there were racists around Vanderbilt that were affecting his career. He was then let go from the residency program. And according to Vanderbilt, not because he was racist, but because he was that resident who was just terrible.
He sucked, yeah.
And then he became famous on Twitter for generating outrage culture and getting social points. He is the great example of outrage culture at its apex. Getting social points on for attacking Trump and attacking the right and playing the victim and so on and so forth. Until it came out that he attacked a friend of mine online, this guy, Dr. Glaucoma Flecken, who writes for Gomer Blog, which is a fantastic website, very, very funny stuff, and basically said that his avatar was blackface.
Right. It was an ophthalmoscope.
It was an ophthalmoscope with a mustache on it.
Right.
AKA blackface. So I called him out and I'm like, that's absurd. Tell me more about this. At which point, women started writing stories about how he created fake Twitter accounts and was trying to gaslight them and manipulate them into sex and different things like that using these accounts. Horrible, horrible behavior. Now, the reason, and I did a show about it, he still got 250,000 followers on Twitter. He's still listened to by people like the New York Times who quote him in articles as being some kind of thought leader in the political space. He's not a practicing doctor, never finished residency, clearly has some kind of problem. The reason I think I shouldn't have said fuck that guy is that in a way, and he's called me out on Twitter for saying this, as an attending physician, he hasn't finished his training. To publicly shame a trainee is actually a bad precedent. And also, I don't know him. I don't know what's going on, really. And I'm just playing into the outrage culture. So I want Eugene to get help and to be successful. But I think what he's doing now is a good example of why we shouldn't be doing these things on social media.
Yeah.
Now, you can say whatever you like, Tom.
Eugene's a piece of shit.
Because you're not as attending.
Eugene is this little minion of outrage. And fuck him. 100%.
Well, and the thing that he got me too'd on the whole thing is ironic. And the thing is, it's really interesting because he's still a darling of the left, even though he's done exactly what... And this is the thing about the left, Tom, that's different than the right. They will fucking eat themselves. They are vicious to their own.
Yeah.
It's not like the right, which has a moral matrix that values loyalty. The left has a moral matrix that almost devalues loyalty. In fact, if you're too loyal, there's something wrong. You're a stooge or a minion, right?
Right.
So it's good when you find like the governor of Virginia was in blackface once in a medical school picture. Fuck that guy. Even though he's espousing all the values we care about on the left, fuck him. He needs to go down, even if he's replaced with a Republican.
You want to talk about the information war? There was an interesting story about that guy, the Virginia governor. When CNN played his picture, or, you know, they played his apology video or whatever, they put on the ticker whatever his name is and then R in parentheses. And all they kept saying was the governor of Virginia.
Oh. Wow.
They misidentified him as a Republican.
Wow. So their bias was just that he's appearing in blackface, therefore he's a racist, therefore he's a Republican.
Yeah, 100%. Oh, but he's amazing. A Democrat.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Our world is fucked up, Tom. Catherine Weedock, who's one of my favorite people, Perfect Tom, hashtag minion of outrage. That's what he is.
Yeah.
But again, and it's funny because so he blocks me, so I can't respond to him, but he'll say things on Twitter like, Dr. Zubin Demanya, you know, as an attending, you know, attacking and telling your minions to tell me to commit suicide is professionally unethical. Are any reporters listening? Stuff like that. And I'm like, I don't control my followers. People who follow me on Twitter, they just happen to follow me on Twitter. They tell you that you should, somebody said, made a comment like, this guy should dig himself a grave and go 6 feet under.
I'm going to start using that as my catchphrase. Are any reporters listening? And be like, sir, you can't have three nugget sauces. Well, I want three. Well, the last one is going to be 10 cents extra. This is an outrage. Are any reporters listening?
Hashtag minions of outrage. That's incredible. You know, I used to get outraged about those fucking sauces. I just wanted my Moulin Szechuan sauce, Tom.
It's like, bitch, I don't care about 10 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Give me my fucking sauce.
Just give me my sauce.
Uh-huh.
You know and I know that sauce costs 1 cent to make. All right? It's made in a sweatshop somewhere in Yugoslavia. And Yugoslavia doesn't even exist, which means that there's some fucking portal of dimensional travel to get there. Did you ever own a Yugo, Tom Heineberg? You were too young.
I didn't. But speaking of Eastern Europe, do you know that... Do you know that the government of Hungary wants to pay, it's free taxes for life if you're a Hungarian woman who has more than four children?
Also, they want to increase population.
Or increase the population, yeah.
Free taxes, so no tax.
This is interesting because what this story denotes, they don't want immigration to increase their population. They want Hungarians.
Oh, wow.
So it's sort
of
racist.
Eugenic.
So,
yeah.
It's interesting, though. They're just like, yeah, fuck off. This is Hungary. We're going to stay Hungarian. What I don't get about this quite is America is the most diverse place in the world.
It's pretty fucking diverse.
And yet we are constantly, we eat ourselves here in America.
Yeah.
We don't give ourselves enough credit for like all the progress we've made and, you know, how good things are here for a variety of people.
You know, it's interesting because as a recovering hard left guy who's now just center left, it's a, It's a hello. It's a mindset.
I almost dropped my microphone, people.
God doesn't want me to speak the truth, Tom. It's a mindset of the left that you question everything in authority, including the very validity of the country that you love so much. You're constantly questioning it, and almost like a parent who's superstitious about saying too many good things about it, which is why when Democrats run for president, they're already handicapped because they can't just go up and say what many people actually feel in their heart, which is this is a shining beacon on a hill that is a example. Yeah, we don't do everything perfect. We're going to make it better, but God damn it, we are the chance for humanity to save itself.
Obama said it. I mean, Obama had a famous speech where he said, you know, we're not a collection of red states and blue states. We are the United States.
Yeah.
And I think that was his defining moment.
You know what? Trump said it in his State of the Union.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting about Trump? I'm going to make a very painful admission, Tom Heinover. I'm going to make a painful admission, and people are going to hate me for this, or they'll love me for this. I don't care. Whenever I read what Trump writes in print, I get violently angry. I'm like, what is wrong with this guy? He can't string sentences together. He's saying crazy shit. It's nuts. And it's always out of context.
Yeah.
Whenever I watch him speak for the whole speech, I'm out of my chair like going, yeah, fuck yeah. Because there's something about his persuasive technique. He does the State of the Union and he's like, this is the thing. It's not about politics. It's about country. And he says it in this weird way. And you're like, yeah, that's right. And you see Pelosi making faces. And you see Pence in his, who is, by the way, a cyborg. Mm-hmm. He's like, gzz! And it is something about it. I told my wife that she wanted to punch me, right? But I was like, it's true. The guy's a persuasive motherfucker.
Yeah, he is. And he's going to win in 2020 because.
Between you and me, it would take a miracle to beat him because all the Democrats so far are just,
they're horrendous.
Why?
They're all horrendous.
Why? Yeah.
Listen, if you're backing Elizabeth Warren at this point, come on. She lied for years about being Native American. Like, it's.
How is it that the left doesn't eat her for that?
Because, you know, listen, if you're the left is not going to run a white man. If you're going to run on the left's ticket, you're going to be a person of color or you're going to be a woman.
But you know who could actually win both? Is someone like Beto.
Nah.
Yeah, because he has the.
Unless it comes out that he's gay. Is he gay?
It's possible.
If he's gay, they would run him.
Interesting. No, I'm not saying they are going to run him. I'm saying he might actually win.
They'd never run him.
They would never run him.
Joe Biden could probably win. They'd never run him.
I don't think Biden could win.
I haven't seen the candidate on the left who I think could actually win against Trump. Because you would have to go up there and out-bully the bully, basically.
You would. You'd have to
it's a schoolyard fight.
Exactly.
It would be the first presidential election that's like a real knockdown, drag-out schoolyard fight.
And you have to win the swing states that voted for Trump because they weren't getting what they needed out of the left.
Right.
And I
think the message that wins them over is socialism. But you have to give them racist socialism. So you have to basically be like, you know, it's not your fault because you're white, but also you probably need some money. You want some money?
Quote Tom Heinover, I think it's socialism, but it's racist socialism. That's what will distinguish the next report. That's amazing. Let's read some comments. See, Erica Gray says she'd vote for Biden all the way.
I would vote for Biden.
I would actually vote for Biden.
Because Biden would, during the middle of the presidential debate, he would be like, I'll sock you in the fucking mouth.
You know, it's
and that's what you need to beat Trump.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
It's true. If it were a Biden Trump debate in the first, could you imagine if the vice president could debate the presidential candidate?
Amazing.
It'd be fucking incredible.
Be amazing.
Remember fucking Lloyd Benson? That guy, and he had to debate Dan Quayle.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this guy's overmatched, man. Have him debate HW.
People forget about those Sarah Palin skits on SNL that were so popular. People forget they did one where Jason Sudeikis played Joe Biden, and he was so good as Joe Biden. He went up there, and he's like, a lot of people thought I was going to be a cocky asshole, and I just want to say I fucking nailed it. You dopes got schooled Biden style.
JB. He just looks like a robot, too. That's the problem. Yeah. You know, the hair plugs and everything.
It's true.
Yeah, it's true. Too much. Racist socialism, says Monica Ramos. Monica, you know, Tom doesn't like your people if your last name is Ramos.
Because, how dare you?
Because one time he got screwed over by a Ramos.
Do you want to hear a theory I have?
Yes.
I think that sometime within the next 20 years, California will have a white tax. And you can come back to this video when it happens because just call me White Stradamus.
Oh, White Stradamus.
Right? Because this is 100% going to happen.
Okay. We're all going to take note of this. This is just going to be like every time some fucking fake prophet makes a statement and they never get called on it.
They're not going to call it a white tax. What they're going to do is they're going to jack the tax rate and then they're going to give all people of color a tax reduction. So white people will be the only ones left paying the tax. I guarantee you this is going to happen.
This is the most InfoWars thing I've ever heard you say.
This is not InfoWars. They're 100% going to do this.
I love it. Cindy Bernard's like, darn, sorry, I just got here. Like, yeah, there's things, there's going to be a white tax. Also, remember that time, Biden? It's just fucking insane. Jeb Bush, Trump ate him alive. Mark Forman, you know what's so funny? So we've actually hung out with Jeb Bush's cousin.
Can't say who.
Jonathan Bush. And he was just talking about how, yeah, man, I tell you, it was really funny. Anyways, to hear the inside scoop on this low energy Jeb.
Well, the left has actually come back around on George Bush. They're like, he wasn't that bad.
I've heard it said that Trump is political Botox for George W. Yeah. Like suddenly the left is like, George W. was an adorable father figure. You remember the 2000s, how much polarity there was? Like people my God. Green Day had to make a whole song. Eminem goes out and he's like, rock the vote. And then of course they fucking carry such a pussy that no one votes for him.
I've told you my secret theory that he was drunk during his entire presidency.
Yeah, tell me this. Tell the world.
So if you listen to George Bush early on, he's very eloquent in his speeches pre-9/11. Mm-hmm. I mean, very eloquent. Like, he's a good politician. Mm. And 9/11 hits, and suddenly the speeches get borderline insane. And for a lot of people that are younger, they don't know how crazy George Bush was. I mean, he would say things like, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, I can't get fooled again. You know, like, that's not the expression, George. Not even close.
This idea that he's closet drunk in the White House is interesting.
He one time said about gynecologists, he goes, you know, there's a lot of good docs who can't practice their love with women all across this country. It's like, that's not maybe the way you should have said that.
Maybe he was high.
I think because he was an alcoholic, he's a reformed alcoholic, so I think he went back to drinking in secret.
And actually...
Because you ever see the video where the guy in Iraq throws the shoes at him, and he dodges the shoe?
Yeah,
such a drunk guy move. He's like, oh! I did it! I just dodged that shoe!
You know, I would feel really bad for George W. if he did have to hit the sauce because he was under so much stress.
Because when you listen to him...
Yeah. Oh, he's super...
He's eloquent again.
Yeah, he's back.
I think he was drunk for like 8 years.
Speaking of drunk, so Carol Sanders Sheehan says, I think Cory Booker has potential to win, but his biggest issue would be his political story coming up is too close to Obama's. So here's the thing. I had lunch with Cory Booker and his people when he was senator of New Jersey, and actually the New Jersey docs... work with him on a lot of things. He's kind of a little bit in pharma's pocket because pharma is the New Jersey constituency. That's one problem. The second problem is when I met with him, he's a really good listener, but I didn't get any sense from him of who he was.
Yeah.
So
he's like an Aaron Burr type.
Yeah. Right. You kind of sit there and you're like, are you just absorbing which way the wind is going?
A little slippery.
Yeah. So I that was just my impression. Now, super nice guy. And his staff was actually really cool. I actually really liked his chief of staff at the time. He was this really edgy dude. But other than that, it's kind of a black box. I just don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is different than blackface, which we started the show talking about.
It's funny, man, because you know you got all these career politicians running against Trump, and you're like,
how are you going to win?
And they're just not going to do it. And guys like Howard Schultz aren't going to win either, even though I like Howard Schultz.
Starbucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where are we at in our game here? 57 minutes. I think we should wrap it up.
Call the code, Z.
I'm calling this.
Call
code.
It.
Last thing. I'll end on this. So that Vanderbilt thing triggered a shitstorm of engagement. And the reason is everyone's like, yeah, she made a terrible mistake. Yeah. We should never make mistakes like that. But how the hell are they throwing her under the bus when there's so many systems things that could have prevented that? And it's going to disencourage reporting, error reporting, transparency, et cetera. You don't go to jail for making that kind of mistake. And I agree. And I think they threw her under the bus. I think Vanderbilt should step up and support her, at least publicly.
They're not going to.
Of course.
You know, I have an aunt in Nashville who belongs to one of the nicer country clubs in Nashville. Let's put it that way.
White privilege.
And people are circling the wagons around Vandy because, you know, Vandy is really important in that town. So it's much easier to throw this one nurse under the bus than it is Vanderbilt under the bus.
You know what it's like? It's like in The Big Lebowski where Lebowski shows up in Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
And or Santa Monica, was it? And he's like, hey, man, like Jackie Treehorn is a known pornographer, man. He treats objects like women. And the sheriff of Santa Monica is like, Lebowski, Jackie Treehorn pulls a lot of weight in this town. You don't pull shit. And that's what it is. This one nurse doesn't pull any weight.
Can I tell you one time I went through the Nashville airport wearing a Vanderbilt hat and because I had gone to a Vanderbilt basketball game. and I was wearing this hat, and I didn't, I was 20 at the time, so I didn't, I couldn't drink. So I went up to the bar and I ordered a drink anyway. And when I was talking to the woman who was the bartender, she was like, oh, you go to Vanderbilt? And I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm a medical student there, you know, so that I would appear of age to drink. And she gave me the drink and I got drunk in the airport. But that's my secret shame that I posed as a Vanderbilt resident once upon a time.
Wow, it's amazing how this all comes full circle, yeah. Tom Heinver. I am delighted by that story. Well, I think that's it. I think we did it. Guys, do me a favor. Like, become a supporter. Like, you get CME and stuff for certain shows, and it means we can say fuck you to the establishment.
That's right.
You can support the show. That supporter tribe has grown a lot, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and we're going to do more.
When it's cool because the CME thing. Like,
CME thing has grew it a lot, and then I think people just want to hang out with an uncensored me.
Well, man, the CME. Live. Oh, my God. This CME stuff is so boring. I've gone to so many of these medical conferences with Z where it's just like, today we're going to talk about capability. What does capability mean to you? To me, you know, right?
Dude, so we
it's horrendous. What, so at least our CMEs are cool.
Yeah, they're, you know, they're cool. Wait, see, we just met with a potential sponsor today. They make video games that teach you medical procedures.
Oh, yeah,
and
this
you get
is
CME
dope.
For them. It's this fucking dope. Amazing. Mm-hmm. You guys are going to be like, Z-Dog, thank you for exposing me to the dopeness.
I feel like all education should be video game based.
Right.
You know?
Hello.
In the future.
Hello.
Like, just put on some freaking VR goggles, and then all of a sudden you're there in Roman times, yeah. Firing a freaking trebuchet.
You use a big word.
Yeah.
It's
a catapult, people.
Looking out through a murder hole, just getting Game of Thrones on a motherfucker. Like, winter lasts like decades. Like, shit like that, Tom Heinver. All right. I love you guys. We out. Kill it, Logan. Kill it all. Kill
Peace.
It with fire. Kill it. Look at the thumbnail. Trump.